Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of Bigfoot Notes from the Field. I'm your host, William Jebning. We're going to be discussing the Southwest regional teams and recent field activities on this edition. So we had our regional director for the Southwest, Joe DeHoyos, and Shane Church, one of his team leaders, to discuss. You guys were in the field recently and got a lot of stuff going on. So hi, fellas. How are you doing this evening?
Good. Yeah, I'm doing pretty good. How you doing, Will?
So, Joe, I guess before we get started, we haven't really, well, we did a little bit with Jeremiah and the Northeast region, but I want to, you know, on the shows occasionally, you know, talk with the regional directors and our team leaders in different parts of the country so that now we already have thousands of downloads for this show, so we're getting some real good exposure out there. A lot of people joining the website, but I want you guys to have exposure so you get more members, more people reporting things in the different regions. So what do you want to tell us about the Southwest region, Joe?
Well, the Southwest region in general, I mean, it's just loaded with activity, you know.
I should have asked you up front, excuse me, you know, what states in the country are under your jurisdiction?
Would you have the list handy, Shane, by any chance?
I know I should have prepped you guys a little better before. I mean, I have all the stuff in mind, and I've just been too busy. But
yeah, we have Louisiana, of course, Texas. I think it's New Mexico, South California, the southern part of California, Alabama. Shane, that's all right.
That's the southeast,
right? Yeah. Hang on, I'm gonna find it real quick. Go ahead.
I think Mississippi.
Sorry, I didn't mean to put you on the spot like that, but now this is where we actually have teams currently, right?
Correct, yes.
Now you do cover the whole southwestern region of the United States, so we are looking for teams in places we don't currently have teams. So you know, if you're listening and you want to join the Jebning Research Group, you can go on my website, williamjebning.com, and as you scroll down the main page, you'll see there's some things at the top, and you can hold your cursor over research teams, and you'll get a drop-down menu, and if you look for, I think it's, well, you can place your cursor over Texas, and I think the Southwest Regional Directors page will come up, and Joe's contact information is in there. So if you're interested in any kind of participation with us, joining a team that exists already or starting a new team, if there isn't one where you are and you're in the Southwest Regional Directors part of the country, get a hold of Joe, and he'll get you set up and started. So go ahead, Joe. You know, tell us about what, you know, what your plans and goals are. You know, maybe the teams you have, talk a little bit about that.
Well, definitely our plans are to get out in the field as much as we can. You know, the goal is to prove the existence of this creature, you know. That's the ultimate goal anyway. Collect evidence along the way, of course, and do it all scientifically and do it the correct way. And, you know, just get out there, basically.
And Shane, Shane's, for those who may not know who Shane Church is, Shane's the guy, if you go on, again, on my website, and if you go to the store, Shane created the underwear changing moment artwork, and the most recent one, and Shane, I've got to show you the t-shirt, I ordered one, and it mm-hmm. looks really cool on the t-shirt, with the Bigfoot psychiatrist, you know, and he's examining another Sasquatch. And it really kills me, the rabbit laughing in the log. That's killer. But so for anybody, you know, if you want to see what the artwork looks like, go on the website and go to the store, and it'll come up, and you'll see Shane's artwork in there, and he's really a phenomenal artist, and great team leader. So fellas, you guys were in the field recently, and I've been itching to kind of get to that. So tell us, you know, sort of how you decided on, you know, when to go and what you were going to do there and what happened.
Well, you know, I decided I was going to do a little expedition and I invited several people. Of course, not everybody was able to come down and participate. Shane was one of them that was able to. My buddy Armando was another guy. He's a man. I tell you what, Will, that guy's a great guy to have out in the field with you, man.
Oh yeah.
Awesome. I mean, Armando's he's a great military mind. He knows his strategy. And he was pointing stuff out to us, Will, that I would have never thought of, man.
Yeah,
right.
So, exactly.
You know, from a standpoint of, because we had went out, me and Armando went out like 3 weeks prior to pick a spot. And one of the things we said we wanted to do was be able to give the Bigfoot or Sasquatch the, the upper hand, more or less, you know. And sure. He said, man, and so he picked out a good spot. He said, man, if we're camping right here, he goes, they can be anywhere around the perimeter of the wood line. They can see our camp, you know.
That may or may not be a good thing.
Yeah, I guess so. But
what made you choose that particular area to go to? And I don't know if you want to mention where you went or not. That's okay if you don't.
No, I really don't want to. People do know the spot, but I'd rather keep it as private as possible. But we had heard several encounters that had happened there, you know, to other teams and just other campers in general.
So it's got it had a history of activity.
Yeah, it's got a pretty good reputation there too, and it didn't let down. Let me tell you,
that was very interesting.
So, you guys went just recently. It's just a few weeks ago, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah.
I guess go ahead and tell me, sort of what happened when you got there, what you did, and sort of how things unfolded.
I got there on Wednesday afternoon, and I actually pulled into camp right about 11:30. And I hadn't even unloaded my truck yet, and I had already heard a tree knock. You know, it sounded like, like someone hitting a baseball out there. Mm-hmm. And before I got all my stuff off the truck and set up, I had heard a total of 3 tree knocks, and that's when I called Lupe right away and said, "Hey man, I'm hearing tree knocks," and he's like, "Yeah, that's a good sign." He told me if it's happening that late in the afternoon.
You know? Now, for our listeners, this is in Texas, right?
Yeah, in Texas, right outside of Houston. And he told me, he said that was a good sign because at that time the weather was changing and the cold front was coming in. He's seen, that's what Lupa told me, that they'd be moving around at that time. That was a good time to go. He goes, "Mangus, you picked a good time to come out there." So,
man, I'm telling you.
And we did.
So what happened? I mean, did anything happen the first night? Or no, it was 11 in the morning when you arrived, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, so... Camp was basically set up. How many people were there in the camp?
It was just me and Joe and I.
Yeah, for the most part. Because did Romano show up that first night? I can't remember. You showed up that first night, Shane.
Yeah, he did. So it was just, late.
Yeah.
So it was just the three of you.
Yeah.
And I'll tell people, if you really want to, maybe experience these creatures, if you're fortunate enough to, or maybe unfortunate enough to, you don't want to go in a huge group. You know, 3 or 4, 5 tops is what I recommend. Any more than that, you really get too big a footprint in the area for any kind of wildlife. So, anyway, continue.
Yeah, so...
when did I get there? About a little bit after noonish?
Yeah.
Something like that?
You showed up.
So here's the one thing that we did that first day is, Joe was kind of giving me the lay of the land, and he's been out there a few times. This is my first time going out there. What I did notice, everywhere we went, I think we only saw about 2 campsites. And that was about it. So as far as people being out there and kind of going in the middle of the week before the weekend, I think it's the best idea ever.
Yeah, I used to go midweek myself. In southern Washington, because nobody would be out in those areas in the middle of the week.
I mean, even next time, Joe, when we go again, because I have to go again, go Tuesday and come back Friday morning.
Yeah.
After 5 on Friday, turns into a carnival out there.
Yeah.
So what happened, fellas? What'd you experience?
Well, the first night... Oh, you go ahead, Joe.
I was going to say, on the first night, it wasn't too crazy at all. There was just you could hear like some howls in the distance, and I don't think it was anything other than than a Bigfoot, but I went back and listened on my recorder, and you couldn't hardly hear it on my recorder, but you could hear them out there, man. They were howling, and a few uh, a few tree knocks, right, Shane? But not very many.
Not very many. And then we had a deer hunter show up, and he kind of camped out kind of close to us. And then Armando came. And then I remember, I want to say it was about 3, 4 in the morning, something like that. The deer hunter guy, he got up and left. I could hear him slamming the doors on his truck. And I was in a tent, which is a two-man tent, which is BS because I had to sleep diagonal in that thing. So,
you ever feel like a Bigfoot taco yeah. in a tent that small?
Yeah. Yes. So he took off, and I think Armando had to be somewhere too. He had to go back home. So he took off. It was just quiet. And then from in the front of me, there was like it sounded like a Louisville Slugger, you know, hitting a tree like a bat, like a that wood on wood. And then I was like, oh, okay, whatever, you know. And then it happened to the left of me, and then it happened to the back of me, like yards
away.
So
you were bracketed.
And I was just
did like, you guys hear? I wanted to interject something for a moment. I'm going to ask. You know, we have our team up in Washington State in the Puget Sound area, Brandy, who had a recording of a tree. Well, I guess you would call it a knock, and it sounds almost like a gunshot.
Yeah.
You guys have heard that?
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard it.
Did it sound anything like what you guys heard?
I imagine if we were close enough to it, it probably would.
Okay, It's not like the tap, 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 you know, no. You see on television stuff. When you hear this stuff, it's really dramatic. And yeah. In one of the, I did a recording for the premium show with Milo and our Tom, Carol and Brandy, and we incorporated that sound in there so listeners could hear that. And they're pretty dramatic. I mean, it's not like what people would expect you to hear when they talk about wood knocks. It's not tap, tap, tap or something like that. It's this really loud, sharp crack.
And you can tell it wasn't like an echo.
Yeah.
What you could tell was there was different distances in between from wherever they were coming.
So whatever was around you, there were at least three.
I would say that, yeah. And then Joe was asking me, hey, why don't you turn on your equipment and start recording? And I told Joe, so I was like, all my stuff, when you turn it on, it goes, you know, and it comes on. Sure. And I'm just laying in the tent, just absorbing and listening, going, you know, I was tripping out.
It's something, you know, I was talking to Jeremiah and the guys, we recorded earlier for another one of the shows, and we were talking about, you know, how people perceive things, you know, in this subject. And one of the biggest things is having enough mental preparation to actually deal with these creatures. And, you know, I mentioned to him, I said, you know, even having seen these things on two different occasions, if I were to encounter one a third time, I can't say how I would react, because it's one of those things when you're out there and you actually experience something that's going on with these things, it's so over the top to your senses, if that makes sense. I've had friends who were combat veterans in the military tell me their Bigfoot experience far overpowered what they experienced in combat in terms of fear and the emotions it brings up. So, and you're right, you know, if you're laying in your tent in the middle of the night and you're hearing these things, you know, your first thought isn't to grab the recorder and start recording. You know what I mean?
I was like, where's my machete?
Yeah, where's the weapon? Right. So, what else happened after that then? I mean, did you just lay there and listen to what
I laid there and listened, and every once in a while you'd hear, you know, another crack until we kind of all got up. Or actually just Joe and I, because everybody else was, Armando was gone. Yeah.
So I guess I got up probably about 8 o'clock, 8:30.
Yeah.
And
did you guys do any searches of where these noises came from?
No, and I wish we would have. I wanted to... I kind of did Friday afternoon, because Thursday night was insane. Like, yeah. I didn't bring a gun. And I'll tell you
what happened that night.
Go ahead, Joe.
Well, you know, what Thursday night, I guess, man, it was early, probably about 6:30, 7 o'clock.
Yeah,
started hearing those same we started hearing those same howls again, and there was a lot of them this time. A
lot of stuff going on.
I mean, you could hear these howls.
Now, were they closer this time?
I don't know if they were closer. They were just louder, or there were just more of them. But I mean, you could hear them
from
the distance.
I want to say to the right, to where you know how I was. You know how I was looking kind of the north, and you were looking to the south.
Yeah.
I want to say to the left of me, so the west of me. I want to say, man, 100, 120 yards away, maybe.
Yeah.
Wow, that's fairly close.
Yeah.
One of them, one of the sounds, I felt like it was like 80 yards away, south where you were facing.
Can, can you describe the vocals?
Something I never heard.
And the coyotes were going nuts, weren't they?
Yeah, it's like after that particular sound, the coyotes would just go insane.
And I don't know if it was the same route. Yeah, I don't know if it was the same pack or maybe two or three different ones, but they were all coming from the west, but they were sounded like they were like in different areas. So I don't know if it was the same little pack of coyotes or they're like maybe at least two other little packs. Man, they were going ballistic.
So you got to picture this, Will. Like we're in a low spot, and about 50, 60 yards radius around us, it goes up to like a hill, and then it just kind of goes uphill and trails.
Yeah, we're like in a bowl.
It's like, yeah, it's like
okay.
It's like if a sniper was out there, he would have no job to shoot us, you know?
Right. You guys were in a depression. You were sort of in the weak spot.
Yeah.
You were.
You know what it sounds to me is like when we were investigating the whole Yakult thing back in the late 80s, early 90s, almost nightly, we would hear the Sasquatches screaming as they come down off the mountain. And all the dogs and coyotes in the whole valley would just go nuts. When they would vocalize, and all these animals would go crazy that were within earshot for miles, and then they'd settle down, and then the Sasquatch would scream again. It was crazy.
There was so much going on that night that it felt like spider webs were coming up off my shoulders and neck, like a spider web's on you, and you pull it off or something, something like that.
Yeah,
we were hearing branches popping within our perimeter. Yeah. You know, I mean, they were popping.
So they were close.
Yeah,
I think so.
And yeah, you know, I was talking to other people, and they were like, well, that could have been other animals. And yeah, they're right. It could have been other animals. It
could have been.
But man, I'm telling you, they were coming from the left of us, to the right of us, behind us.
We were like almost back to back.
And it was just me and Shane there by ourselves.
and I turned to Joe, and I said, Joe, because he brought two guns, I was like, I think I'll take that other gun right now.
I laugh because I've been in that situation. I know what you guys are went through, believe me.
And he told me, he said, Joe, he's like, give me the gun, I'll pay the fine.
Look, I don't give a shit. I slept with that gun.
Yeah, you did. But so Armando, what time Armando find up showing up again?
Oh, he showed up late that night. He showed up about 8:30, 8:45 after everything kind of, I don't know, it just kind of calmed down.
Yeah, kind of died off for a little while.
Yeah.
So he comes out there, and we're out there talking and sitting around a campfire, and we're trying to get him caught up to speed on everything that happened. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, we hear this boom, and something hits his truck.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And
hit his truck.
Yeah, he was parked underneath some branches, but there was nothing on this tree big enough to make that noise, and it would have to have been a big limb or at least a good size one to make that noise that it made.
It also sounded like a side shot, not from falling down.
Yeah, yeah.
Like it hit the side of the truck.
Yeah. And
that definitely alarmed us.
Oh yeah, that and we all, I mean, we all stood up. We were all sitting in our chairs, and when that happened, we all stood up, and we kind of looked at each other for a couple of seconds. And then
good Lord.
Everyone grabbed the flashlights, walked over to his truck to investigate his truck.
Yeah, Armando's got a headlamp that'll light up half the forest.
Yeah. And and then Shane, you said you heard something about that little pond, right? And that's why you walked over there. Man, I'm getting shaky talking about it again. You know,
I know it's kind of freaking me out. No, because I thought that's where something was thrown from. Because it sounded like it was on that side of his truck facing the pond.
Yeah.
So that's I figured I could walk over there and I would have the whole pond in front of whatever it is. Right. You know, me.
Did you see any kind of markings on his truck or figure out what hit the truck? No, was there any, you know?
And we were looking too. I was looking on the hood. We looked in the bed of his truck, you know. There was nothing around there. There was nothing on his truck.
I mean, we took a stroll around the pond. We kind of walked and checked it all out and lit it all up.
Yeah, cause it's dark back there.
You can't see nothing back there.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Also, Thursday.
Is that the same that we walked down to the end? The little cul-de-sac down there?
Yes.
Yeah, and we walked down to that end. This is before Mono actually got there, too. I'm sorry, I don't mean to go backwards, but even before he got there, we were like, well, let's go walk down to the end over here. So we walked down to the end of this little road. It kind of ends and turns into like this little, we call it like a little cul-de-sac. That's what we were calling it.
Sure.
And so we're down there, and I hear something pop behind me. I mean, 20, 25 yards behind me, I can hear something just pop. You know, it sounded like a, you know, when you step on the rocks, those big rocks, you know, they kind of like make that popping noise. That's what it sounded like. Now, right away, I told Shane, hey, I heard something pop back this way. So we started walking back that way, which was back toward the camp. And when we got to the edge to where that road turned back into the road, down a little bit past our camp, we heard that pop again. Pop, you know. We walked down that road again, and we couldn't find it.
Not only that, but also Thursday night when me and Joe were, you know, back to back, ready to, you know, defend the Alamo. like I said, I was looking north and he was looking south. And it was funny because we both kind of went, hey, man, did you hear that? And I was like, yeah, man, did you hear those? It sounded like a thump, thump, like way in front of me out in the woods.
What sounded like bipedal walking?
It just sounded like a two-step and stop kind of a thing. And then Joe's like, no, I didn't hear that. I heard, what did you heard something totally different.
Like a branch snap, you know?
Yeah, it was just, that's what I'm
And at all this time is going on, I'm texting Lupe, and I'm calling him. And he's like, hey, man, watch out. Be careful, you know, watch out, you know?
I'm like, where's Armando?
I'm surprised Lupe didn't go with you.
He had a doctor's appointment. He couldn't go.
Okay.
Yeah, man, he wanted to go out there bad. I could tell, too.
Yeah, we could have used guys that night for sure.
Yeah, and you know, that's what he was telling me. He said, man, he goes, they'll do that to you. They'll distract you. Be careful. You know?
And, yeah, I definitely got a game plan for next time, man. I've been looking at the map of that area, and there's definitely going to be way better next time, for sure.
So you guys looked at the layout to see where there's avenues of approach and waterways and things like that, right? Those are very important things to pay attention to, especially when it comes to Sasquatch activity.
And not only that, but like the access for people just to go to was
absolutely
super limited.
Yeah, see, that's something else too that it's very important. People go out and they think they're going to go look for Bigfoot, and this is something I talked about with the guys earlier. We were talking about, you know, various forms of evidence and like, you know, the blob squatch pictures and all that kind of stuff. That was our topic of discussion. You know, knowing where other people are is extremely important because, and this was kind of a joking thing we used. You know, you never know when other people are going to do pranks and things, you know, especially if they think somebody, you know, they may or may not know you're out looking for Bigfoot. It's irrelevant whether they know that or not, but just to play the joke, if they've seen, you know, Finding Bigfoot or whatever. And I'll give an example. When the Blair Witch Project was out in the 90s, you know, my buddies and I were up camping near Mount Rainier, and, you know, being the smart aleck I am, you know, always pulling some kind of a joke or prank. What we would do, because it's so wet, you know, in that part of Washington most of the time, I would bring tarps and tarp the camp off so we'd be nice and dry and sit next to the fire in our lawn chairs and stuff. So in the mornings, you know, when we break camp, I just buy a cheap ball of twine, you know, to tie the tarps off with. Then I'd cut the twine and throw it in the fire. So after the movie, I decided something, I guess I saw a tree branch or something that reminded me of one of the stick figures, you know, I had in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
So here I take the twine and I'm building these stick figures and hanging them up where the
tree was.
And my buddy Scott, that I've known since we were in the sixth grade, comes over and about has a hemorrhage laughing, you know, at this, because he knows exactly what I'm doing. And so, you know, my brother-in-law just kind of looks at this and shakes his head like, you know, here we are, the couple of juveniles, you know, doing this stuff. And he says, I wonder how many people get wigged out when they come here and see this, you know. I said, I'll bet we've ruined a few camping trips over that one. But the same thing, and there was another story. I knew an outdoorsman a few years back from the Midwest, and he said, and then they lived inside of a small town, not on the outskirts or anything. So he said he one day him and his 80-year-old father were sitting out in the yard, and they were talking about the show Finding Bigfoot and, you know, what a load of garbage it is, you know, because he's a big game hunter. He knows, you know, what you should and shouldn't do with wildlife. So his 80-year-old father, he's sitting in a chair, and he picks up this 2x4 and he starts hitting it on the wooden fence. And after doing this a few times, then he gets an answer.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. So my friend decides to take a walk around the block to see where this is coming from. And he gets around, you know, a few houses down. He sees another old man about his father's age sitting in a chair out in the yard. And he's banging on the fence with a piece of wood, too.
That's funny.
So, you know, knowing, but those things are good examples of knowing if people are out there and what are the chances that they might be making some of the noises that you're hearing, you know. And again, that goes back to why it's important to, you know, if you experience something when it's daytime, go and do a thorough search of those areas to see if there's anything that backs up what you heard. You know what I mean? To be sure, to kind of rule it out or collect more evidence or what have you, or at least to be sure. If it was somebody else, you can say, oh, okay, that's a relief. You know, I don't have to sleep with the gun next time or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's very important to kind of know. Now, in your case, there was very limited access to people, and you only saw a couple inhabited campsites, mm-hmm. and then the deer hunter. I was curious, when you mentioned the deer hunter, did you guys broach the subject of Bigfoot with him by chance, or...
No, but I did go over there and ask him, you know, what he was doing. You know, I saw him. I said, I'm going to go ask him what he's doing, you know. So I walked over there. Because he had all kind of, like, this weird equipment that, like
his... Yeah, he was very technical.
Yeah, they're like he was getting ready to build a time machine or something over there. And
he was deer hunting.
Yeah. So I walked over there.
That didn't seem to make a lot of sense to me. I mean, they used to just carry a rifle and some snacks, you know.
Yeah. And, so he was actually parked next to my truck, so I walked over there trying to pass him up, and I just said, hey, man, so what you got going on? And he said, oh, I'm just going to do some deer hunting in the morning. I said, okay. But he didn't go anywhere. He stayed in his little tent all night. Right?
He stayed there, and then he left in the middle of the night.
Yeah, he left, like, about the time because I heard his door slam. That's what.
Now, that's really odd. I mean.
Yeah, but.
Well, I guess there's no telling what's in somebody's mind. I mean, you could jump to the conclusion that maybe he's up there doing something else, but I guess you never know.
And I did get that feeling.
Now, the camp that was closest to us, we could hear these guys because these guys were getting silly drunk every night, laughing. You can hear the echoes. Remember, Joe, we're like, there they go.
Right. Yeah, they're a couple hundred yards away easily, maybe 300.
You could tell they were just sitting around laughing.
So you guys have looked at the maps now where the sounds and everything were coming from, the vocalizations and the, you know, the wood knocks and such. What's it like on the outside of those areas? I mean, are those accessible by people from, let's say, from the opposite side of where you heard the things coming towards you guys? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, there is a trail that morning. Remember, we drove all the way back. It was like several miles.
Yeah.
If we had taken that trail, we could have walked to the camp if we made a shortcut through the woods. But there's no way you're going through those woods. There's no way.
It's thick back there.
I guess what I'm getting around to is, you know, kind of giving listeners an idea of what the area is like so that, you know, we can determine whether people would have access to that or it's extremely unlikely they'd have access to that or, you know what I mean?
I think people would have access if they came off the hiking trails, but, you know, like, we drove around everywhere, and we didn't see, like I said, nothing but a couple of campsites.
Nobody was out
there. Just deserted everywhere. We walked quite a bit of trail, too.
Yeah.
And didn't see very many people at all.
I saw
one old couple out there. I don't think they're going to be doing any hijinks.
Not likely, you know. They'd be sitting in a chair beaning on the fence with a 2x4, maybe. But.
Yeah, but like from where those houses are coming from, there's no way I don't think a person.
Nah, that was out deep in it, man. That was deep in.
Okay.
But
well, it's always helpful to get an idea of, you know, kind of what the area is like, and you know, when you talk about hearing things like that or experiencing things, you know, close to the camp. And we had this happen back in 1976, where the four of us went out and had the group of Sasquatches surround us out there, and we were the same way. We were back to back, you know, with the machetes ready to, you know, defend ourselves and be eaten probably, but and it's you know, it's really a frightening position to be in, because you don't know. Now you guys do you think there were Sasquatches there? Is that,
well, that
what your thoughts were, or
did you hear that that little yell that I sent you, along with the wood knocker? There was like a little yell.
Yeah.
Did you hear that one, Will?
No, I don't
think I hear that.
Yeah, I think I need to send you that one. Yeah, there was like a little yell.
Okay.
And that was like 8 yards behind us.
I actually played that sound for my wife, because she grew up in Missouri in the woods, period. Had to drive a four-wheeler to get to her friend's house through the woods, miles and miles.
She would have heard things.
And she looked at me and just went, I don't know what that is. So.
Yeah.
You know, I had a friend who lived in Missouri for a while, and apparently there were a lot of Bigfoot stories in Missouri.
That's a place you can't just walk around in. It's all a hill.
Exactly. Kind of like Oklahoma, mm-hmm. You know, you can't just go wandering around any old place.
I was pretty amazed on how hilly the terrain was where we were.
Yeah.
It's just a part of Texas I've never really
seen. People don't think of it.
I guess a lot of people think of Texas as flat.
Not out there.
You know, and there's some real mountainous areas in Texas.
Man, that one trail we went to, remember on the way back, we're like, Jesus Christ, I didn't realize we were going downhill the whole time.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Until we went back.
Until you go back.
We went back.
It was like miles and miles of a gradual hill going down. So we're just walking, and it seems like we're walking kind of fast or whatever. You know, no big deal. But on the way back, damn.
It's working on the way back.
I'm like, what the hell? Are we walking on flat ground?
So, anything else happened before you guys broke camp and left? Or?
Well, not really much. You know, we started getting a little bit of activity Friday, but a bunch of people started showing up. And I mean, there was like a group of like...
It was ridiculous.
There were some
guys?
Yeah, the college kids.
The Lord of the Flies crew?
Yeah.
Holy
they were
crap.
Just jerks. Man. They were big-time jerks.
They had like an 8-foot fire and a 12-foot radius. Oh, and they were...
They're burning pallets.
Cursing and...
That's something people don't... I'm sure people who camp, you know, can relate. I have a story... And it's funny, you know, because just like that, you know, my same buddies, my brother-in-law and my buddy Scott, you know, three of us would go camping, and sometimes, you know, a couple of the guys would join in, but we have a place that the road is so bad, you have to have a four-wheel drive to get in on the road to where there's a lake, and you can camp on the lake, and it's pretty nice once you get up there, but it's you know, we all kind of cringe every time we try to drive over the road because it's so bad. So we're up there in the middle of the night camping. It was real peaceful. And we hear this commotion about 12:30 in the morning, after midnight. And here comes, now mind you, it takes a pretty stout four-wheel drive to get into this road because it's on bedrock that's just awful. And the rain and the water has washed the soil away. Here comes a bread truck.
Damn.
I don't know how in the world they got in there with a bread truck. And these guys were drunk as hell. And they pull a boat. They pull a boat out of the side of this thing. Out of the side door. And they get out of the boat. And they're shooting shotguns around. And we're all like ducking behind trees in the middle of the night. Because these fools are... We can hear them out there laughing and shooting. And we don't know whether the rounds are going to come in our direction or what's going to happen.
You can't make that up.
No. we packed up at first light and got out of there. It was just, these guys were insane. They were insane. How they got there in the first place is beyond
me. I was hoping the Bigfoot would come and take one of those guys, too.
Oh, that was the best. I just come crashing out. All those guys would have been screaming like girls. It's like after 5 o'clock, everybody got off of work, and that place was like a circus.
Oh, I was like, yeah. Yeah, I think a lot of places are like that. I think a lot of it where it's fairly easy access.
I think a lot of it had to do with, like I was saying earlier, was the weather change. A lot of people, you know, probably waited until it got cool to go camping, and that was the perfect weekend to do it.
Yeah, we literally sat and made it through the weather.
Let me ask you, did you guys, prior to going or choosing that area, did you happen to notice on the sighting history of the area if it was kind of consistent as far as the time of year when the sightings were happening, or were they spread out throughout the year, or were they happening during the time period you went there?
Well, you know, that whole area, I think they're there year round, because you hear about them all the time. You know, I mean, you can hear about a sighting in July, you know, so I don't think they go very far, and so I just think that particular area is a pretty,
Yeah, there's actually some things I know about that area from my inside contacts that are different than all the other areas around the country, and I'll talk to you guys about that off the air sometime and give you a heads up about that.
Yeah, it's the perfect place for something,
because I mean there's pigs there all the time.
Deer, we saw deer.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
We walked through a part where it looked like a hog maze. And you can see it's all rooted up all through all this thicket area. It's like they just had like a community going there or something.
Yeah, they may have. Well, fellas, do you want to talk anything about your, like Shane with your team, or Joe with what your plans are as far as building up the southwestern region, or this is sort of your platform to talk up the southwest region and
go for it, Joe.
No, I was gonna say, really, I just want to get as much teams as we can here in the Southwest, and get a lot of.
Texas is so big itself.
Yeah, Texas is big, and we and Shane were talking about that. We got so many places I like to go, and I like to get other people to join in and go to some of these places for us, you know. And we definitely use boots on the ground, that's for sure.
Definitely need to branch out.
But I think we talked about it too, Will. You know, you don't have to be going out in the field to help out, you know.
Absolutely. The Jebbing Research Group needs people from, every aspect of involvement. I mean, you don't have to necessarily go to the field to be a huge help to the effort. Anything anybody's able to do or willing to do to be part of this is certainly welcome.
What about you, Shane?
Yeah, totally. Just, get on jebbing.com and look us up and get a hold of us. We're more than happy to talk to you.
Yeah, that's good. Absolutely. And Shane, I don't know if David got your email on the website or not.
Yeah, he does. I think so.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it's up there. Shane's information's up there.
Okay. So if anybody wants to get a hold of either Joe or Shane, like I mentioned, go to williamjebbing.com, scroll down the main page, and you'll see some items at the top. Like for the shop, or it'll give you some different things to click on there. One of them is research teams. Just put your cursor over research teams and you get a drop down menu. And in that drop down menu, you can take a look at the team pages that are there. We certainly don't have pages for all the teams because we've got a lot of teams everywhere. And for anybody listening, and you guys know, we just picked up, of course, we've got a couple different groups in India. But we just picked up a team in Indonesia as well, so I'm kind of excited about some of the expansion that we're getting.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, I was talking to the guy in Indonesia. My wife has friends there, and she was planning a trip over there. So I'm gonna try to go out there too. My wife got mad because I wasn't gonna go out there with her until I met this guy. So now she's like, "Now you're gonna go out there, and
now you're gonna go
doghouse."
Yeah, I'm actually planning to do a show with both the people we have in India and our guy in Indonesia now, so I'm kind of looking forward to that.
Very interesting.
Well, fellas, do you guys, is there anything else you want to talk about before we wrap it up, or?
I think I'm good. I'm ready to get back out there. I'll tell you.
Yeah, I'm ready to get it. Hey, if anybody's ready to get out there,
about, I haven't man, stopped thinking about up. Thursday night, dude. I can't get out of my head.
Well, fellas, I think what I'm going to do is we'll wrap this one up, and I want to talk to you both after we're finished. Okay. So hang on. And for those listening, I'm going to be attaching to this an interview I did with our good friend Bobby Rich. So stay tuned for that, and that'll be right after we wrap this portion up. So hang on, folks. We'll be right back with that. Well, we're going to go ahead and talk about your encounters today. So when was the first time, I guess I like to go back and ask people, you know, before anything happened, Bigfoot-wise, you know, what was your exposure to the subject?
The only thing that I did was like when I was like 5 or 6 year old, the me and the neighborhood kids went to a double feature of Planet of the Apes. And the Patterson-Gimlin film was the intermission between the two shows. That was my first experience. Then the In Search Of, and then the Real Life Thing.
That's interesting. I didn't realize that they had put the Patterson-Gimlin film out, you know, with in movie theaters like that. We used to go as kids all the time, you know, to the theaters, but I never got to see anything that cool.
Yeah, it was in between the Planet of the Apes, so it kind of fit right in.
Yeah, that'd be kind of a kicker, wouldn't it? So, now how long ago was it that you had your initial experience with these things? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
The first one was in 76. The last one was in 82. But I really haven't been out in the woods much since 1982. But this will be my first year deer hunting this year again since then.
Oh, nice. Nice. Well, back then, I guess, what were you doing that led up to the incident that day? Sort of walk us into that.
I was minding my own business. we were camping. It was the weekend after 4th of July in 1976. We were up there the 9th, 10th, and 11th. And this was the last night we were there. And I was in a tent with my pup, and my parents and sisters were in a motorhome, and there were two other families in campers. We're in like a U shape, and I was at the end in my tent and up kind of against a big tree. And sometime in the wee hours of the morning, I heard crunching of lava rock, which with the roads were paved, or not paved, but it was, they're dirt roads, but they're covered with lava rock. And I heard crunching, so it was either coming off the mountain or down the road, and it was headed right towards / by camp down to the creek. And then I heard it go off of the lava rock, and it stepped on the boulders, the creek rocks, and you could hear him shifting under the weight. And then it stopped, and then all of a sudden you hear click, 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 like it picked up two rocks and was hitting together. It did it in sets of three, and it did it three or four times, and then it stopped. And all of a sudden you hear the river rock start shifting again, and it's heading right towards me, right towards my tent. And it's probably 50, 60 feet away from where it was doing the clanking at. And I'm getting more and more petrified. I can't move, scared to death. And then you hear it stomping on the lava rocks again. And then it crosses right by the back wall of my tent. You can see from like the chest down. And I checked the calendar last night, that date in 1976, that was the night of the full moon.
Oh boy.
So it had a perfect shadow cast on my tent, and it had probably hair that was probably 4 inches long. You could tell that was matted looking. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I saw that thing, I screamed bloody murder, it shot out, and my dad.
You scared each other.
Yeah, my dad came out of the camper with a gun, almost shot the picnic table, thinking it was a bear. And I made him check the area to make sure there was nothing out there, and then I zipped the tent out and ran for the camper and got in. The next day we were leaving, so I went out there and checked. There were no tracks, and everybody was telling me that was either a bear or a deer hitting its hoofs on the rock. And I'm saying, no, it's not what it was. It was a Bigfoot. But in my mind, they're really not there. They were wherever the Patterson film was filmed at.
And what part of the country was that?
You know where Sonora's at?
Yeah.
It was probably 30 miles past that on up 108. The place is called Eagle Meadows. It's past Pinecrest Strawberry.
Oh, boy. Yeah, that's good country for these
things. That's where the Sierra Sounds were.
Right.
Roughly
right.
Filmed that.
You know, one of the details you mentioned, like the rock clacking, that's something that we hear quite a bit now. It wasn't talked about a lot, you know, years ago. And, you know, I know a lot of, you know, the original people didn't talk about a lot of the things people told them. You know, they had sort of a certain set of things that they would discuss and think that were legitimate. But especially in terms of hunting, or, you know, if oftentimes they'll hear one set of noises like that. And then from another distance away, they'll hear, you know, a return of that sound, kind of an answer.
Yeah, I wasn't concentrating on anything else but that one noise.
No, especially you know if you're a kid, you know, and you're in that situation, you don't think. I know I never did. You know, you sort of focus on what's right there at the moment, and that's where your mind is. So what'd your parents think about that?
They didn't believe me. They just thought it was a bear or a deer. They blew it off.
I think that's pretty common too. You know, I remember the first time I found tracks at my parents, you know, we were all excited telling them what we saw, and they laughed at us. They thought we were crazy.
Yeah, but there is a but to this story, but I'll get to that in a little bit.
Sure, go right ahead then.
Okay. Either that same year, okay, this was July when I saw mine, and we go deer hunting archery season in August, which is in a different location. And it was either that same year, a month later, or the very next year, my dad had his encounter with one.
Oh, he saw one.
Yeah. Too. So his was just like the Patterson-Gimlin film. It was probably 3:30 in the afternoon. Him and my grandfather were coming back from town. And just about a mile from camp, he goes, "There's one." It's meaning a buck. And so he hit the brakes. And he said he looked at it, and it was buff like a deer color.
Mm-hmm.
It was about 6 feet tall, and it was walking just like the Patterson-Gimlin film, except for it was going the opposite direction. And he said it did just like the film. He said it turned and looked at him over his shoulder, and he said when he did that, he floored it, got out of there. And then
I think I would have too.
And then they... he told everybody in camp, and they went back the next day and looked for tracks, but it was too rocky to find anything.
That's pretty common, I think, you know, with a lot of places, the ground just isn't, and people don't understand, if it's not just right, you get either really poor impressions or none at all.
Yeah, so my dad now had his encounter, but he didn't tell me until like a couple years ago about his. So, but there was also a few years later in like the early 90s that somebody else in that same exact spot had the same exact experience, but this time it was 8 feet tall and it was also buff. Wow. So I'm sure it was the same one.
Same individual.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking when you mentioned the height and everything, it was probably a juvenile.
Yeah. But now he's all grown up.
Wow. You know, and that's the thing a lot of people don't understand. These things will, if they're undisturbed, you know, they'll stay in certain areas, you know, for long periods of time.
Yeah, this is, all my locations, the first location is all by itself. That's above Sonora. It was roughly 6,000-ish feet elevation.
Right.
All the other stories that I have, my dad's and my other four, are all located within about 5 miles of each other up near Susanville, about 26, 30 miles northwest of Susanville.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, I'll let you just go ahead and tell us what, you know, sort of take us from that point forward.
Okay. Roughly a couple years later, I'm guessing on this, roughly 78, 79, probably 78, right about a quarter mile from where dad has his encounter, which is like a quarter mile from camp. If you're going that way instead of on the road, we were doing a hunt where half of us go on top of the hill, half of us are on a lower hill, and the people that are on the people on the lower one are on a road down below. And the job of the people up on top of the hill are to make a lot of noise coming down and push the bedded deer down to the people on the lower road.
Right.
So I was on high duty, and I was walking from the top of the hill. I went through some old growth, tall trees. Then I came into manzanita. It was probably 8-12 feet high, really dense, thick. I made it through that, and then where I was, I got the bad end of the straw. I have to go into this one spot. It was an old burn area that was grown back, and the next spot to go into was where they had replanted trees, and they were probably 25, 30 feet tall, but they never thinned them out, so their trees are probably 3 feet apart. So it is like a
pretty thick,
thick, dense, dark in there. It's like walking at nighttime.
Dear Lord.
It's spooky. So I'm walking out like halfway through it, and all of a sudden, and I'm walking from north headed south, and all of a sudden behind me, I hear the Tasmanian devil. So I flip around, I'm looking, I don't see anything, but you can hear it in the manzanita, and you can hear it's moving. It's walking from west towards the east, and I could follow the sound until it finally went out of range. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, this is weird. I'm like 26, 30 miles from civilization. There's nobody else that hunts in this zone in archery season. And it's nobody from my camp. And it's no animal that I know of. So
you're kind of narrowing it down a little bit.
So it's stuck in my mind, you know, all this time that, you know, but I never knew what it was. And then later listening to different stuff, things on the internet and stuff, it was like the kind of like the Sierra sounds. It was, and then I knew what it was.
Sure. Yeah, sort of upset you after the fact, which is a good thing. You don't want to be too spooked when you're
yeah,
there.
Yeah, but now I know. So if it happens again, then I'll just faint. So.
So maybe you should stay off the internet. Don't listen to those things.
Yeah. So, okay, then a year or two later, I'm going to guess 79, 80, doing the same exact thing in a different spot. I'm on top hill duty, so I'm walking through big, tall stuff. Then I come to a small area of manzanita, and I go through it, and then I come to a big clear cut. So I go hug to the left, like up against the tall trees. And then all of a sudden, I hear this growl that is like any other growl that can ever be heard. It was low. It was not a bear. It was not a mountain lion. It was so low pitched, and it just vibrated me. And I flipped around. I'm looking. I don't see anything. But I know it's standing in the manzanita up where I just came from. So I walked to the center of the clear cut, so there's nothing around me, and I could see anything coming at me. And then I looked over, and I saw my uncle walking down. He was in the next clear cut over. And so I felt a little better, and then I went ahead and finished on down the hill. That was number three. Okay, number four was my worst. This was in 1981. This is right by the one that I just heard the growl, or near it. And anyway, we were up there hunting our normal season, and three of us were going to come back at the end of the season and spend a couple more days before it closed. So when we were up there, I found this tree stand that was sitting right off the road. It was right off the edge of the road, and right there was a pond where the animals were coming to water. So I didn't have a vehicle, so I had to wait till we came back up. I'd have my own vehicle. So when we went back up, went out there, I had a three-wheeler. So I went back out the first night. I got pictures of does and fawns and chipmunks and squirrels and birds. And second day, just before I got to the stand, I ran a buck brush thorn into my pinky knuckle. And
ouch.
So I went ahead and got up my tree stand. I tried to cut it out. I just ended up pushing it all the way into my knuckle. So then it stuck out. So I had to get down out of the tree, go back to camp, wait for them to take me to the hospital, get it surgically removed. So now my pinky's in a splint, sticking straight out. So I get the next day, that's the last day we were there. So I go back out. This is like 3:30 in the afternoon. And I parked like 100 yards down from the stand. It's the road's slightly angled there, so I could see it down at the where I was, so nobody would came by and would steal it. If somebody happened to, I'd see them. And I walked to my tree stand. I decided I better go do my business before I did. So I walked back where I did not think the deer would be coming from. And I walked like 35 yards back in, did my business, buried it. Walked back to the stand, tree stand, climbed up in it, was turning around, and was in the motion of sitting down when all hell broke loose behind me. It was It was a lion's roar with the intensity of a T-Rex is the only way to describe it. Shook me to the bone.
Good Lord.
I was in the motion of sitting, so I sat down, and I got the nerve. I slowly looked over my shoulder. And there was nothing standing there. All I could see was just to the edge of the road, which is like 25 feet away. And whatever it was standing just beyond that. And I'm sure it could see me from the waist down, but the limbs were blocking me from seeing it. So I sit there. Hey, go ahead.
Go ahead. I was just saying, it obviously knew what you were.
So I sat there and was just watching for anything. There was no sound, no nothing. Everything just went dead silent. And, well, it could have already been dead silent because I was crunching and walking and making all sorts of noise. I hadn't zoomed in on everything yet. But then all of a sudden, like 15, 20 minutes later, it did it again, but this time it was in front of me, off into the distance. I was standing, the pond was in the end of a clear cut, and this was at the far end of the clear cut in the deep woods. And so now my eyes are switched over there, and I'm watching it, and then pretty quick I catch a glimpse of something tall and black stepping off the road out of my peripheral vision, stepping off the road and into the deep woods, heading towards that second sound. So now I know there's two of them, but still in my mind,
I was thinking when you were saying that the spatial relationship, there may have been.
Yeah, there were two of them. So now, but still in my mind, there's no Bigfoot up there.
Sure.
So I waited and I waited and I waited. I waited about an hour, and I'm thinking to myself, okay, the sun's going to be going down anytime soon. If I'm in this tree stand after dark, I'm dead meat. So I waited the hour. I flew down that tree and I ran towards the three-wheeler. I didn't even look into the woods or anything. I just got on it and got out of there. And
I think I would have gotten the hell out of there too.
That was the end of number. That was 81. I was a junior in high school then. Then my last one the following year I was about a mile away from the one in the tree stand, just right down the road. We were hunting in the pickup truck. It was me and my sister in the back. It was my dad and I don't remember who in the front. And we were heading towards the tree stand that I was in. And that right there is the edge of a hill. And it drops, the hill is like a 45 degree angle right there. And it drops down a couple thousand feet to a lake below, Eagle Lake. And I was looking downhill. And my sister was looking uphill. On her side, there was only like a one-lane road that they cut. And it was like a six-foot bank on her side. And then it went up, continued with the hill. So anyway, it was an old burn area. And the stuff was starting to grow back. The manzanita was probably 4 or 5 feet tall. The pine trees were, I don't know, 15 or so feet tall. And so I'm looking downhill. And we're coming up on some old growth that hadn't burned that was hanging over the road. And if you're in the back of the truck standing up, leaning up against the cab, you got to look. And when it happens, to either duck or put your arm up so you don't get brushed off when you pass under it. So we were coming up on that. So we're like 35 yards away, and I looked over at it, and right, like 10 feet off the road, there was a pine tree probably 15, 20 feet high, right up against the old growth. The top of it was bent over, and there was a Bigfoot looking at me. I could see his face, all except for his lips. There was a branch covering his lips, and I could see his left shoulder down to about his elbow.
Can you describe the face to us?
He had a rounded head. He had no fur on his face. It was just like a gorilla, completely skin. It was black, just like a gorilla's face, and he had jet black hair that was probably inch and a half long, very well kept, like he'd combed his hair, very well groomed, and he had big black eyes. There could see no white of his eyes. And I could see two big nostril holes. I think he had his head tipped back like he was in shock, like I was in shock. And that's the reason I could see his nostrils so big, and his eyes were enormous, huge. And I was looking at him, and I looked away real quick. I looked back downhill, and I looked back at him. And he had let loose of that branch, and the tree was rocking back and forth from him doing that, because he had it all the way pulled over.
Good Lord. And how big do you think the tree was?
It hit 15 to 20 feet tall.
Okay.
And then we were about 20 yards from it, and that tree he was behind, about 10 feet away, there was another one about the same size. So it was a gap in between them, and I saw what at the time I thought was a baby. I saw from the elbow all the way back to the knee. He was on all fours running. His arms, front arms were stretched out, and his back legs were stretched out like in a full gallop mode to get the heck out of there. It was
running kind of like a chimp does when they're on all fours, or?
Yes, and it was jet black with the silver back. And then I backed all the way up to my sister, thinking that this thing is going to be standing behind this tree 10 feet away from me when we pass this spot any second. And I back up, and when I got there, there was nothing there. There was like a 10-foot space between that tree he was standing behind and the old growth. It ran back about 40 feet and then ended into manzanita. So all these years I'd been thinking that this was a baby that was jumping off of the big one, taking off. But then listening to all these things on the internet, I come to discover it was actually the big one going down all fours with the silver back getting the heck out of Dodge.
Yeah, that makes sense, actually.
With the yeah. So,
let me ask you, on the face, you know, a lot of people tell me, you know, you probably, you know, you've seen that picture from Them and Us.
Yes.
Did it resemble anything like that? And for anybody listening, you can go online and look at Danny Vendramini's book, Them and Us. And he's got some artist reconstruction from Neanderthal skulls.
No, it didn't look that primitive. It looked more like a gorilla's face without the cone dome. And just give it a more human nose.
And that's actually it's more common than people think, you know, with the rounded head. It's like with any, you know, if you look at a group of gorillas, not all of them have the conical head, you know, with the sagittal crest. There's varying degrees of that. So same thing with these things, you know, there's some differences, you know, between individuals.
Yeah. I think when we talked before, you said it was a type 2.
Could have been the type 2, absolutely. One of our teams in Upper New York, they deal with a lot of the type 4s there, which typically have, you know, the clear faces, clear of hair.
Yeah.
But they're a little bit smaller. But, you know, I mean, again, you know, within populations, you're going to have variation among the species.
Yeah, so, this guy was about 10 feet tall.
That's a big one.
Yeah.
That's probably not a type 4.
When we were crossing back to where he was, I didn't want to look down there, but I did it anyway to where he was standing. Sure. And I just glanced over there. He was about 10 feet off the road, and it slants at like a 45-degree angle, so I'm guessing about 2 feet below. I'm standing in the back of a pickup truck, and I'm almost 6 feet tall, and he was still taller than me. So that's how I'm getting the guesstimate.
That's big.
Roughly 10 feet tall.
Now, being a hunter, you're pretty familiar with weights of animals. Yeah. What would you guesstimate that thing weighed?
He was at least 8 of me, so I'm saying roughly 800. Yes.
Yeah, I think that's probably a pretty good guess. I know the or more. The first two I saw, I know pretty well, you know, from growing up on a farm and hunting too. I think my guess is pretty close that the adult was a good 800 pounds, and then 14 years later in 88, when I had my second encounter with one of these things, it was a short encounter, but that one was enormous. It was 9-10 foot tall easily. And I guessed at that time between 1,000 and 1,500
pounds. Yeah, one thing I do have to say about this one, the last one I saw, from the center of his face to the edge of his shoulder was at least 5.5 to 3 feet, or 2.5 to 3 feet. So he was 5.5 to 6 feet wide at the shoulders.
Yeah, and I think that's pretty typical for a big one like that. I would say the same thing on the ones that I've seen. They were, you know, there was a lot of space between the edge of the shoulder and, like you say, the center of the face. And that's a really good way to describe that. I think a lot of people don't get the sense of how large these things are until, you know, you can describe something like that. So I think that's a really good way to describe
that. Yeah, that ended my hunting and going into the woods alone. And so, like I said, this is what...
Yeah, I know that
this
feeling.
Was, 82, and this is what, 2016, and this is my first time going back deer hunting.
So how do you feel about going out there now?
I will,
you know, knowing
I went out there. I went last year, but I didn't hunt. I stayed in the truck, and I looked for deer for people, and I was never alone. I'm not going to be alone by myself anymore.
I tell you, you know, I know the feeling exactly. Believe me. I went to the field a few months ago with a guy north of here, and I was a little apprehensive at first because it was just two of us, and I knew there was a lot of activity up in that area, but fortunately he was armed and he made sure I was too, we did find evidence in there, very fresh evidence. There were some prints, not real great tracks, but there was, you know, some of the snap trees, and we found where one had been eating clay near a small creek, you know, with the finger marks and the mud and everything. But that area, they'd actually been pretty aggressive up there and, scared quite a few people in the area. So it's one of those things I always think about. Of course, I think, before I'm going to go, that I'm going to take all these precautions. We're going to be armed. We're going to have people close by. Until I get in the field, then my nose is on the ground and I'm kind of ignoring all the people around me.
Yeah, what really sucks is when you're up there deer hunting, it's archery season, so you can't carry a gun with you. You just have your knife right strapped to your side and your bow and arrow. That's all you got.
Well, I'd say carry some bear mace and maybe a couple of road flares in your pocket just in case. Well, that's fascinating stuff, Bobby. I sure appreciate you sharing that.
No problem. Glad to finally get on.
Absolutely, and we're going to be people will be fascinated to hear your account. So, again, I really appreciate that. And if you have another experience up there, you definitely come on again and talk to us about that.
Will do. Going up again in July to scout and August to hunt.
Oh, great! Awesome. Well, definitely keep me
posted. Okay, will do.
All right, my friend.
Okay, talk to you later.
Thanks again.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye now.